This episode's audio was generated using AI technology. If you sit at a desk for like 8 hours a day, your body's primary waste removal system is just completely stalled.
Oh, completely. It's just sitting there.
Yeah, it's just sitting there. And I think we're so conditioned to think of biological transport as this active, pressurized loop.
Right, like the circulatory system.
Exactly, like the circulatory system.
Make that.
But the lymphatic system, it operates in this parallel, totally unpressurized universe. And unlike your heart, it doesn't have an automatic pump.
It has no pump at all.
None. It is entirely waiting on you to physically move.
And, you know, that is the biological reality that gets entirely lost when a fitness concept gets hijacked by social media algorithms.
Oh, absolutely.
We take this fundamental physiological process, you know, clearing out metabolic waste, and suddenly it is wrapped in all this aggressive marketing.
Yeah, this celebrity endorsements.
Right, celebrity endorsements and these wild promises of instant detoxes and effortless weight loss. It's
out of control. Well, welcome to another episode of The Steady State. Today, we are tearing down the viral obsession with lymphatic walking and lymphatic drainage.
It's about time.
Yeah. We have a massive stack of sources to work through today. We're looking at peer-reviewed medical studies, including just a brilliant clinical trial on heart failure patients.
That one is fascinating.
It really is. We've also got clinical perspectives from physical therapists, insights from the hospital for special surgery, and fitness reviews from platforms like Tom's Guide. Plus, the scientific teardowns of all that social media hype.
There is a lot to get through.
There is. So, okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is to separate the fiction of miracle fat melting from the highly grounded, very mechanical reality of how our bodies actually recover.
Right.
And, you know, to build practical, sustainable habits for physical fitness.
And to do that effectively, we really have to establish the physical architecture of this unpressurized universe.
All right. How it actually looks inside.
Exactly. We know the lymphatic system clears cellular waste, but we often overlook its role in digestion.
Oh, I totally didn't know this part before the reading.
Yeah, roughly 70% of our lymph nodes are actually located in the gut. The sources highlight these specific intestinal lymph vessels, and they're called lacteals.
I found the mechanics of those lacteals absolutely fascinating because, you know, when we eat dietary fats, specifically the long-chain fatty acids, they are physically too large to pass through the walls of our standard blood capillaries.
They just won't fit.
Right, they won't fit.
Yeah.
So the body packages them into these larger transport molecules called chylomicrons. And the only way those chylomicrons can get out of the gut and eventually into the bloodstream is by traveling through these specialized lymphatic vessels.
Right. What's fascinating here is how that fundamentally links your digestive efficiency to your lymphatic health. But that brings us back to the core mechanical problem. Once that fat, along with excess interstitial fluid and cellular waste, is inside the lymphatic vessels, how does it move? You mentioned earlier it doesn't have a pump.
Yeah, the best way I could visualize the architecture, based on the clinical texts, is to picture a massive network of canal locks.
Okay, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, so the fluid enters the canal, but it can't flow freely because of a series of one-way valves.
Mm-hmm.
The water only moves forward when manual external pressure forces those physical gates open. And then the gates just sort of slam shut behind the fluid to prevent it from flowing backward.
Right, to stop gravity from pulling it down.
Exactly, because gravity is constantly trying to pull all this fluid down into our legs. So for the fluid to travel up from the feet through the abdomen and up to the collarbone where it drains, we have to physically squeeze the canal.
That is the exact mechanism. The space between those valves is called the lymphangin. And while it has a very, very slight intrinsic contraction, it is almost entirely dependent on extrinsic compression.
Meaning things outside the vessel squeezing it.
Exactly. Skeletal muscle contraction, the expansion of the lungs during respiration, and changes in tissue pressure are what squeeze those canal locks.
So if you're not moving.
If you are sedentary, the skeletal muscles aren't contracting. The fluid is trapped in those lower locks.
Wow.
And that localized pooling of interstitial fluid is what causes joint heaviness, sluggish recovery, and that physical sensation of being profoundly bloated.
Which brings us to the collision between human biology and TikTok.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, because that pooling causes a visible puffiness. Social media has taken that visual effect and mistakenly conflated fluid reduction with fat loss.
Right, which is just biologically incorrect.
Right, but you have massive celebrities like Dua Lipa, Hailey Bieber, and Novak Djokovic swearing by lymphatic drainage. And because they are incredibly toned, the public assumes the drainage is actually melting the adipose tissue.
It is biochemically impossible for lymphatic drainage to oxidize fat.
Say that again for the people in the back.
It's impossible. Fat loss requires a sustained caloric deficit that forces the body to release stored triglycerides into the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
And then those are broken down inside the mitochondria of your cells to produce ATP, water, and carbon dioxide.
Right.
You exhale the carbon dioxide. You cannot massage a fat cell into oxidizing.
No.
You cannot take a specialized lymphatic walk that somehow bypasses cellular metabolism and manually squeezes fat out of your body.
So when, you know, a fitness influencer steps on the scale after a week of dedicated lymphatic walking and they show their followers they were down 2 pounds, what is physically happening?
They have simply accelerated the movement of that trapped interstitial fluid through the canal locks.
Okay.
They pushed the excess water weight back into the venous circulation where the kidneys rapidly filtered it out into the bladder. The mass they lost was just water.
Just water. But let me challenge the utility of that. If it's just water weight and it's going to return the very moment we eat a salty meal or hydrate heavily, why should someone focused on sustainable physical fitness even care about this?
That's a fair question.
Like, if we aren't changing our body composition, what is the actual functional point of prioritizing lymphatic movement?
The point is functional recovery and metabolic efficiency.
Okay.
When excess fluid pools in your tissues, it increases the diffusion distance between your blood capillaries and your cells.
Oh, I see.
That means oxygen and nutrients take longer to reach your muscle tissue after a workout, and metabolic waste products like hydrogen ions take longer to be cleared away.
That makes a lot of sense. So you just physically recover slower.
Yes. Your joints physically feel stiffer because the capsule is swollen with fluid. Furthermore, macrophages, the immune cells that clean up cellular debris, they rely on the lymphatic system to function efficiently.
Wow.
So when you manually clear that stagnant water, you aren't just dropping a temporary pound on the scale. You are optimizing the cellular environment for recovery.
You reduce that awful tight close feeling.
Exactly. And your musculoskeletal system just moves with less friction.
That makes perfect sense. We are basically clearing the highway so the actual repair trucks can get to the muscle tissue faster.
That's a great analogy.
But I want to look at the clinical proof of this movement. Because it's one thing to understand the canal locks in theory, and yours another to prove that specific movements actively shift fluid overload.
Right.
And the sources pointed to populations where this isn't just about feeling a bit bloated, but where fluid management is literally a matter of survival.
The 2023 study published in Frontiers in Cardiovascular Medicine is the perfect lens for this.
Yeah. They looked at 66 patients dealing with heart failure.
Right. In heart failure, the weakened heart creates a massive pressure backup in the venous system.
Mm-hmm.
Fluid seeps out of the vessels and pools heavily in the lungs, which causes severe breathlessness, and it pools in the lower extremities.
And these patients were put on the TOLF-HF program, which is the optimal lymph flow for heart failure.
Yeah.
What struck me was that this wasn't an intense cardio protocol at all. It relied entirely on lymphatic activation through muscle tightening, deep breathing, and specific large muscle pumping exercises.
The mechanics of the deep breathing are critical here. Your body's largest lymphatic vessel is the thoracic duct, which runs right up through the chest cavity.
Oh.
When you engage in deep diaphragmatic breathing, you create a negative pressure environment in the thorax.
Like a vacuum.
Exactly. That negative pressure acts like an anatomical vacuum, literally pulling the lymph fluid up from the lower body and the lungs, pulling it through the thoracic duct and dumping it into the subclavian vein.
That is wild. If deliberate breathing and targeted muscle contraction can physically vacuum fluid out of the lungs of someone with severe heart failure, imagine what it does for a healthy person whose only issue is post-flight ankle swelling.
Yeah. Or delayed onset muscle soreness.
Exactly. The study showed the patients had significantly fewer instances of rapid abnormal weight gain, which is the clinical marker for dangerous fluid buildup.
And no pharmaceutical diuretics were added for this specific intervention.
None. Just mechanical manipulation of the body's own plumbing.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it validates the underlying premise of the trend.
Right.
The marketing might be totally flawed, but the biological mechanism is incredibly potent. Which begs the question of application. How do we take this out of the cardiac ward and into our daily fitness routines?
And that brings us to the actual practice of lymphatic walking. Sam Hopes, a fitness writer for Tom's Guide, reviewed her experience with the trend.
What did she find?
She admitted it didn't give her the miracle flat stomach promised by TikTok, but it entirely shifted her mechanics, because a lymphatic walk is highly specific.
It's not just a casual stroll?
No. You maintain a brisk pace, you intentionally swing your arms to compress the lymph nodes in the axillary region, the armpits, and you force deep belly breathing instead of shallow chest breathing.
I'd argue that the arm swinging and belly breathing are just the start, really. To truly optimize the peripheral pump, we have to look at the lower body mechanics, which closely mirror the centuries-old practice of Japanese walking.
Okay, contrast that with Western walking for me.
Well, Western walking habits often involve slouching, looking at phones, and a sort of flat-footed, heavy-impact shuffle. The calf muscles barely engage.
I understand the posture change. I mean, keeping the spine upright obviously opens the chest cavity for that vacuum effect we talked about.
Yes.
But how does walking differently in the lower body actually change the fluid dynamics? Surely standard walking moves the legs enough to squeeze the locks.
Not optimally. The gastrocnemius and soleus, your calf muscles, are often referred to in clinical literature as the peripheral heart.
The peripheral heart?
Wow. Japanese walking emphasizes a very deliberate, shorter, gliding stride with a pronounced heel-to-toe strike.
Okay.
When you strike with the heel and actively roll through to push off with the toes, you force the calf muscles through their maximum range of contraction and extension.
Oh, I see. So it's a full squeeze.
That maximum contraction acts as a powerful hydraulic press against the deep lymphatic vessels in the legs, aggressively forcing the fluid upward against gravity.
Right.
If you just shuffle flat-footed, you lose more than half of that pumping power.
So it's about maximizing the muscular squeeze per step.
Exactly.
And the sources also tie this type of mindful, structured walking to Shinrin-yoku or forest bathing.
Yes. When you combine this mechanical heel-to-toe walking with a natural environment, the physiological benefits just cascade.
Because it's not just pretty trees.
Now, forest bathing isn't just about pretty scenery, it's chemical. Trees release organic compounds called phytoncides. Studies show that inhaling these compounds combined with the rhythmic movement significantly reduces sympathetic nervous system activity.
Which is your fight or flight stress response.
Exactly.
And shifting out of fight or flight lowers cortisol levels, which reduces systemic inflammation.
Right, but it goes deeper. That shift into the parasympathetic rest and digest state actually stimulates the production and activity of natural killer, or NK cells.
Wait, really? The immune cells.
Yes. These are specialized lymphocytes, white blood cells, that are a vital part of your innate immune system. They patrol the body looking for virally infected cells or tumor formations.
Wow.
So by optimizing the lymphatic flow through mechanical walking and reducing stress through environment, you are directly increasing your immune efficacy.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me regarding the digestive aspect.
Right.
We established earlier that 70% of the lymph nodes are in the gut.
Right.
The sources cite a 2021 study showing that just 10 to 15 minutes of walking after a meal drastically reduces bloating, gas, and fullness.
Yeah.
Mechanically, why does that happen?
It accelerates gastric emptying. When you engage your core and rhythmically move your legs, you are physically stimulating peristalsis.
The muscle contractions.
Yes, the wave-like muscle contractions of the gastrointestinal tract. You are mechanically massaging the stomach and intestines, which forces trapped gas bubbles to disperse.
Oh, that makes sense.
And it moves the chyme, the digesting food, faster through the system while simultaneously squeezing the lacteals to absorb the dietary fats.
It's like taking your body off autopilot and putting it into manual mode.
Basically, yeah.
But, you know, relying on a brisk heel-to-toe walk assumes we are always mobile. If the system is entirely dependent on gravity and muscle contraction, what happens to the fluid during a 10-hour flight? We can't do a vigorous Japanese walk down the aisle of an airplane.
No, they usually tell you to sit down. That is the ultimate bottleneck. Long flights, days stuck at a desk, or recovering from a localized injury where you literally cannot load the joint.
Right.
In those scenarios, manual drainage techniques and specific at-home habits are the only way to manually turn the crank on the canal locks.
So let's focus on manual lymphatic drainage, or MLD, because I think anyone who lifts weights or does heavy physical fitness assumes all massage needs to be deep tissue. Like if a muscle is sore, we grab a foam roller and put all our body weight on
it. Right, we just grind into it.
Yeah. But the clinical physical therapy texts say MLD is the exact opposite.
It has to be feather light, and the anatomy explains why.
Okay.
The very beginning of the lymphatic network, the initial lymphatics, are located just micrometers beneath the epidermis.
Well, they're right under the skin.
Right under. They don't have thick muscular walls like veins. They are formed by overlapping endothelial cells that are anchored to the surrounding connective tissue by microscopic elastic fibers.
The sources use the visual of paper straws for this. If you press down with the pressure of a deep tissue massage, you completely flatten the straws.
Exactly.
The overlapping cells get crushed shut and no fluid can enter the vessel.
Precisely. The goal of MLD isn't to press into the muscle. The goal is to gently stretch the skin.
Stretch the skin, not press the muscle.
Right. When you stretch the skin, you pull on those microscopic elastic fibers, which literally pulls the overlapping cells apart, opening the microvalves so the interstitial fluid can flood into the vessel.
Oh, wow.
Once the fluid is in, the pressure releases, the valve closes, and the fluid is trapped inside the canal lock, ready to be moved upward.
And it always has to be moved upward, right? Toward the heart.
Specifically toward the subclavian veins just under your collarbones, because that is the terminus where the lymphatic system merges back with the cardiovascular system.
Okay. Palak Dengla, who's a chief physiotherapist, recommends mimicking this action even at a desk.
Oh, definitely.
She suggests an overhead reach with deep diaphragmatic breathing, which drops the thoracic pressure to pull fluid up.
Yeah.
Seated calf raises against the floor to manually pump that peripheral heart. Even slow shoulder rolls to mechanically squeeze the upper thoracic pathways.
All excellent techniques.
But the mechanical manipulation is useless if the fluid itself is sludge. The sources point out that lifestyle support, specifically hydration and sodium management, is non-negotiable.
At the cellular level, lymph fluid is heavily water-based. When you are dehydrated, the viscosity of the interstitial fluid increases.
It gets thick.
It becomes thick and sticky. You are essentially trying to force mud through those delicate paper straws.
Oh, that sounds awful.
It is. Furthermore, if your diet is highly processed and loaded with sodium, the osmotic balance in your tissues shifts. The sodium forces the extracellular space to hold onto water, massively increasing the volume of fluid trapped outside the vessels, which instantly exacerbates the stiffness and bloating.
So you need adequate water intake to keep the fluid thin, and you need to moderate sodium so you aren't artificially flooding the tissue spaces.
Absolutely.
And you can pair that with tools like dry brushing, which uses light friction to stimulate those superficial anchoring filaments under the skin, or even compression garments that provide a continuous graded squeeze against the calf muscles when you are forced to sit.
It is a holistic biomechanical approach to a purely mechanical system.
So what does this all mean? If we strip away the TikTok filters and the celebrity endorsements, the truth about lymphatic walking is incredibly empowering. It is not a magic hack for fat loss, but deliberate, mindful movement, engaging the calves with a heel-to-toe strike, utilizing deep belly breathing to create an internal vacuum, and supporting the system with proper hydration is how we optimize our biology.
Yes.
We don't need a pricey wellness program. We just need to understand how to operate our own internal machinery.
This raises an important question, though, and it's a concept I want listeners to seriously consider.
Okay.
We have established biologically that this massive, intricate waste removal system relies on constant physical compression to function.
Right.
If you stop moving, the system stalls and metabolic waste accumulates in the tissues. So what are the long-term, multi-decade implications of the modern sedentary lifestyle on cellular aging?
Oh, wow.
If we leave the system in a stalled state for 8 to 10 hours a day, year after year, we aren't just dealing with swollen ankles. We are potentially looking at accelerated cellular senescence, where the chronic accumulation of metabolic waste degrades tissue health and longevity over an entire lifetime.
That is a brilliant and really heavy thought to carry into your next workout or your next walk. Mm. Are we accelerating our own aging just by sitting still? And definitely something to mull over as you practice those heel-to-toe strides and diaphragmatic breaths today. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Steady State. Stay grounded, keep moving, and we will see you next time.